All right, good morning. How's everybody doing this morning? Pretty good? Ready for a full day? I think you've got a full day coming at you, a big one. They really pack a lot of sessions into these. So welcome to deploying Windows 8 and 8.1 using SCCM 2012. Before we dive into the material, I'd like to give you a little background information on myself. My name's Rhonda Layfield. And I've been in IT since high school. It's over 30 years now. So I decided I'm going to stop counting and just say it's been over 30 years. I've been in IT for a long time. I started out when I joined the U.S. Navy. I was in the Navy for 7 years, and I started with mainframes and punch cards. Anybody else do punch cards in here? Excellent, quite a few of you. How about punch tape? Does anybody go that far back? Really, we had some punch tape in the labs, but we didn't really use it at that point. We were still doing just punch cards. So it's been kind of exciting in this industry for so long and watching it move so quickly. I installed the very first PCs in the Federal Building number 2 in Washington, D.C. So Pentagon is number 1, Naval Annex is number 2, and that's where they write all the orders for all the military people. So I got to install the very first PCs, computers with no hard drives. I'm sure quite a few of you have been there. Oh, is it? Thank you. I wondered what you were creeping up here to do. Is that better? You can actually see what I'm talking about now? Awesome. I am a setup and deployment MVP. I have been for 7 years. If any of you would like to find out how to become an MVP, just talk to me after one of the sessions, and I'll let you know what you need to do to become an MVP. But it's really a lot of fun because we get to go out and talk to Microsoft once, twice, some years, 3 times, depending on if it's a launch year or not, big products coming out, big changes. And what our job really is to let Microsoft know how we use their tools on a daily basis. So I'm a contractor. I go into new environments about monthly. Sometimes I'll do a 2 or 3 month job, but usually it's about 3 weeks, 5 weeks. I go in and I do a lot of evaluations for how people have set up their deployment solutions. Things aren't working the way they thought they would, so they call me, I come in, and I kind of fix everything, tinker around a bit. And every company I go into hands me this list of, these are the things we want our deployment to do. And every single list is completely different from every other company. So there's always this big, long wish list of, well, the product doesn't do 90% of that, but being an MVP, I can contact Microsoft and ask them, how can I make the product do things it doesn't normally do for this client? And they work very closely with the MVPs, so we kind of help drive the direction of the deployment tools, and we give them lots of feedback on what the clients are asking for. So it's a lot of feedback that Microsoft doesn't get themselves because they're busy developing the products, not the product teams aren't going out and actually using those products in real-world scenarios. So MVPs, lots of fun. And it affords me the opportunity to come to fun places like this and do presentations. So I really enjoy that. I'm also a trainer. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, you've got my email address and website information. The first topic I'm going to cover is the Windows Automated Installation Kit versus the Windows Assessment and Deployment Kit. Now, how many of you guys have SCCM installed back at work? Awesome. And you've been doing OSD deployments using SCCM. All right. So you probably know about Windows AIK. The Windows Assessment and Deployment Kit is the newest tool. Now, the reason these are so important is because under the hood, of course, SCCM requires either the Windows AIK or the Windows ADK. So which product should you use, and how do you know? How do you figure out which product you should use? It actually depends on the version of the operating system that you're going to deploy. So if you're going to deploy Windows 7, you need MDT 2012 Update 1. You can use 2013, but if you're using 2012 Update 1, that's fine for Windows 7. And you need the Windows AIK for Windows 7. If you're deploying Windows 8.0, you need MDT 2013 and the Windows ADK for Windows 8 version 1. If you're deploying Windows 8.1, You need MDT 2013 and Windows 80K for Windows 8 version 2. They're named the same thing. The way you know is the version numbers is when you launch the deployment command prompt, you'll actually see a 6.2 would be version 1 for Windows 8. Version 6.3 is version 2 for Windows 8.1 deployments. So what's the major difference between these tools? The version of PowerShell that's supported. Is it 2.0, like it is for the Windows 7 environments, or is it 3.0, which we use for Windows 8 and 8.1? Also, the version of USMT, the User State Migration Tool. Now, how many of you have played with USMT by itself? Manually set things up. You know all about gen.config and all the XML files you get to go configure. The tools, MDT, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, and Config Manager, they help you out with these nice, friendly wizards, so you don't have to spend a week or a week and a half trying to figure out how to get USMT's scan state and load state to gather the data and settings that you want off of your client machines. What switches go with which other switches? Which switches cannot be used together? It's a huge learning curve if you haven't done it. So USMT by itself, manual process, pretty difficult to understand all of the requirements that go into it, and exactly how to get the data and settings that you want saved from the user's machine, maybe put it on a server someplace, wipe the machine clean, put a new OS on it, and then bring all of that data and settings back down again. That's the purpose of USMT. About two versions ago, we got hard links with USMT. So it's not new, but it's something that I don't use very often. Hard links allows you to store the data locally on the machine. You're not going to put it on a server, but what it actually does is it creates a map, and it puts in the physical sectors of the hard drive where your data resides and your settings, and then it kind of cements them in place. So you take that OS off, you can't format the drive. If you format the drive, you just deleted everything. Put the new OS on, and then the map goes away, all the data's still there. I like to format the drive in between operating systems. It's the one time you get to start with a clean slate, just wipe everything clean, and start from the beginning with the new OS. So I kind of like formatting the drive. I very rarely will use hard links, but the scenarios where I do use hard links would be if I have one user with tons of data. I know in the States we have some big applications like AutoCAD. AutoCAD has huge files that go along with it. So if you've got a lot of users that have tons of data, you have to think about network traffic. How much traffic are you going to put out there if you're going to copy all the data up on a server, wipe the machine clean, put the new OS on, and then bring that data back down again? Now multiply that by how many deployments you're going to do that night, 20, 30, 40, 50. So you have to kind of think, well, is it worth using hard links? Because I'm not going to get to format the drive. I don't get to start with a clean slate. But I'm also not putting a ton of data across the network and having to wait and slow everybody else down as well and then bring it back down again. So USMT is a lot easier to use if you just use the friendly wizards in either MDT or SCCM. WinPE, your Windows pre-installation environment. Everybody's seen WinPEs at this point. Did you know in the new Windows 80K, we have a special utility called Make WinPE ISO? Has anyone used that one yet? Oh, just a couple of you. You might not need to create your own WinPE. In the past, we used CopyPE. That would generate the WinPE, and then we had to move some files and rename them, and then run the good old OSCDIMG, Operating System CD Image Creator. And that would create a bootable ISO for us that we could then put on CD. WinPEs are small, we don't need to go to DVD with those. Or you could open the ISO and put it on a UFD. That's just a USB that's bootable. And the first time I ever saw UFD, it was in Microsoft documentation, and I had to go look it up. I had no idea what a UFD is. I'm like, oh, wow, there's a new device out there. No, it's just a bootable USB device. That's all it is. Now, with the Make WinPE ISO, it's pretty much everything's done for you. The one thing you need to be very careful of is if you're going to put it on a USB stick, when you plug in the USB and you tell it, make WinPE ISO and give it the USB UFD switch, it will format the USB. So anything that was on it, it gets rid of it. So you just kind of need to be aware of that before you start playing around with make WinPE. But now you don't have to know about copy PE or OSCD IMG. It does everything for you. So it's kind of nice to be able to create your own WinPEs. The latest version of WinPE is version 5.0. And the things that we get in 5.0, .NET Framework. Actually, we got that in 4.0, but it hasn't been greatly used yet. MVPs were asking for this for years and years. We wanted .NET because in our WinPEs, we wanted to be able to inject applications that we could do troubleshooting with. Put in rootkit detectors. So you have this WinPE that you could store on a WDS server. If you think a machine has a rootkit on it or some type of virus, you could pixie boot the machine, connect to the WDS server, choose the WinPE that you have added to it as a boot image, and you've injected your tools into it, and then no matter where you are, you can always pixie boot, so you don't have to remember or go back to your desk to get that USB that has the WinPE on it. So I kind of like the fact that we can put our WinPEs on a WDS server, pixie boot any machine we need to, and load up that WinPE, and then use the tools. A lot better than having to run around and find things. UEFI support. Are your machines usually UEFI when you purchase them now? I think we all get our hardware from the same companies. Anybody ordered from Lenovo lately? Hands. You guys having problem getting hardware? The last two deployments I've done. I just recently moved from Washington, D.C. all the way to the other coast. I'm out in California now. And it's the only place I could find where they're deploying Windows 8.1. Nobody's doing it yet. Nobody's going to touch it. They've all just finished doing Windows 7, or they're still in the middle of deploying Windows 7. And a lot of the organizations that I work with are federal agencies and military. So they spent millions of dollars already testing applications to make sure they'll run on Windows 7. They've tested the image. They've invested a lot of time and a lot of money. So they're just now finishing up with Windows 7. They're not about to go back to the drawing board and start with Windows 8 or 8.1. So a couple of pharmaceutical companies in California are already rolling out to Windows 8.1. They want to be on the bleeding edge. And it's been lots of fun because there's not a lot of tools. So trying to make Windows 8.1 do certain things during deployment, if you guys run into any issues, please email me. Because I think we've tried to make 8.1 do everything you can possibly do. And it's not as easy as it was with Windows 7. So there's a lot of things that you still have to script. There's a lot of things that I like to put into task sequences. If you're not familiar with task sequences, you will be by the end of this session, I promise. So back to UEFI. Cool things that UEFI gives us. Secure boot. So now it actually loads the kernel a little bit earlier, and it protects the hardware. So viruses can't scoot in there right before the OS is installed or up and running. So with secure boot, it's kind of nice to have secure boot, but it does break pixie boot on a lot of devices. A lot of the devices that have the touch screen, specifically Helix devices, the nice cute little laptops, you can take the top off and walk around with the tablet. They don't have any network ports. The only thing they have is like three USB ports. So if you want to connect them to a projector, you have to have a dongle. If you want to connect them to the network, you have to have a dongle. And depending on the type of dongle you buy is going to determine how difficult it is to do those deployments. A lot of the dongles take the MAC address of the dongle and they associate that to the computer. So when that machine becomes an SCCM client, SCCM knows about the MAC address. It's already deployed an OSD to it. So in order to use that dongle on another machine, we have to go into SCCM, find that machine. I just open up monitoring, go to reports, and do report based on MAC address, type in the MAC address of the machine, and then it shows you what that computer name was. You might not be the one who used the dongle last. You might not know what the computer name is for that MAC address. Then you can go into devices and delete that device out. Prior to that, you'll get failed to find task sequence. And it will drive you nuts trying to figure out what the problem is. but it's based on the type of dongle that you get. So if you guys do get into situations, the first deployment I had, we did about 600 machines. It was a very small deployment. And we were just doing in batches of 90. So we had these carts built, had all the dongles tied down, had our 90 machines up there, deployed those, took them off, put them back in boxes, grabbed the next 90, and then we had to go into SDCM and delete all those MAC addresses. All those clients had to be wiped out because every single one, when we booted it up, failed to find task sequence because it was based on the type of dongle. What we found later on is we had like three or four different kinds of dongles, and so then we started using the other ones, and we didn't have that problem. So it was specific to the dongle. So UEFI actually gives us the ability to have a GPT, a GUID partition table, partition to boot from now. In the past, we had MBR disks, master boot records. Everybody's familiar with MBRs, I'm certain of that. It's been around forever. Good old MBRs, they had some limitations though. You could have four partitions on an MBR disk, four primary, you could have three primary, one extended, and then break that up into logical chunks if you needed more drives or partitions. With GPT, one of the nice things is the amount of hard drive space that's supported in a partition is up to 9.4 zettabytes. Can you imagine a desktop with 9.4 zettabytes of space? I would be in heaven. With all the VMs that I run out of hard drive space immediately. It seems like as soon as I get, I've got 1 terabyte on this laptop, and I still am constantly running out of space and having to get new hard drives, and I don't want to delete all my VMs, so I build new ones, got to go get new hard drives. So lots of hard drive space, and there is no limit. If you read the actual RFC for the UEFI specs, you will see that there's no limit to the number of partitions you can have, but Microsoft's implementation of UEFI will limit you to 128 partitions on a drive. I think that's quite a few. So UEFI kind of opens things up for us. It also makes it more secure. And I talk more about UEFI kind of in the next session about what's new to the deployment tools. But I just kind of wanted to mention it here for OSDs. We're going to talk about the tool to use, SDCM. We'll cover MDT integration. Then I'll walk through and create an MDT task sequence for you inside Config Manager. We'll talk a little bit about automation and customization. I want to show you where to go to get the help information. There's some fantastic help files, but they're not in Config Manager. So I want to make sure you guys know where to go to get this information. The tool we're going to use to deploy Windows 8.1 will be SDCM 2012R2. If you're running SP1, you're not going to be happy with trying to deploy 8.1. 8.0, you can kind of limp along, but the tools make it so much easier if you just go ahead and upgrade Config Manager to R2. You also need to make sure, if you're running an earlier version of Config Manager, what version of Windows AIK or ADK did it install? You might need to remove whatever the AIK or ADK is, upgrade to R2, and then install the latest version of the Windows ADK. Otherwise, you'll be trying to walk through the wizards and the underlying scripts will fail because it has switches on some of the utilities that don't exist previously. So older versions, you'll have all kinds of problems trying to run DISM and some of the other underlying tools on the older products with the newest operating system. So you want to make sure you've got the latest and greatest. Integration of MDT, this takes about 5 seconds. Very, very easy to do. I've never seen it fail, unless you have the Config Manager console open when you attempt to do the integration. Then it will fail. Let me show you what the integration is going to look like. I'm just going to minimize it now. When you install MDT, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, you will get the Configure Config Manager integration. the first time you launch it, since it's not integrated, the selection to actually integrate it will be chosen. There we go. So I've already integrated it, which is why it knows it's been integrated, and what it offers me is the ability to remove the integration piece. I've never really had to do this before, unless people integrated only a portion of it. When you first integrate MDT, you need to make sure that you integrate the MDT task sequence as well as the extensions that come along with it. Now, why is it so important to integrate MDT into Config Manager? You get 217 additional settings that you can play around with. So operating system deployments can be done with Config Manager without MDT integration. No problem, piece of cake. But you get a lot more options, and it's easier with the MDT task sequence. You don't have to know what to put inside a package if you want to run USMT. When you create the MDT task sequence inside Config Manager, you just tell it to go create all the packages for you. It knows where all the files are, and then it can automatically put the exact correct files in the package. So it's kind of nice that the task sequence does that for us. Integration has been done, and the way I know that integration has been done and it's working properly is I now have this create MDT task sequence. Prior to the integration, that doesn't exist. All right, so let's talk just a little bit about traffic. OSDs can get pretty big pretty fast. When we first started working with images, WIM images, I think it was very common to put everything in the image. So we ended up with these great big fat images. And it was not uncommon for me to walk into an environment and see a 12 or 15 gig image. That's going to take a while to deploy. So a lot of people decided, you know what, every time we make a little tiny change, I have to regenerate the WIM image. You want to change the version of an application, something as simple and basic as the version of Adobe Reader. Well, gosh, that could take you a couple days. And then if you have a new WIM image, now you need to go test it and make sure everything that was working is still working. So it was a lot of work. So we kind of decided, nope, let's do this. Let's not put anything at all in the image. So we went from fat image to thin image. The only thing in that image is the OS. You can get the image down to about 3.5 gigs. A lot faster to deploy, but then you have to deploy all your applications to go along with it. You can do it through group policy, you can do it with MDT or Config Manager, but that really took the length of time it took to do your deployments to be a lot longer than if you just had that fat image to start with. So what we all ended up with was something kind of in the middle, the hybrid image. So the information that you should put inside your image would be applications that every single user is going to get, like Office or Adobe Reader, Flash, Java, C++ redistributables. There's like tons of those that you have to install for 8 and 8.1 now for all the different applications that run. So with the hybrid image, it's kind of nice. They're a little bit smaller. And we can take that single image, plug it into a task sequence that can be deployed, and then if you have additional applications based on maybe the department or the person's role at work, you can have additional applications that come down from Config Manager. Let's say you've got one task sequence that deploys your custom WIM image you've created and all the HR applications. Then you have another task sequence. You use the same WIM image. You only need one. Use that same WIM image, and in the second task sequence, you have all the applications for maybe the sales department. So it's nice to be able to use one specific WIM image. You only have one image to manage and to patch. That image, what tool do you guys use to create that image? Anybody know? Tell me what you're doing back at work. When you create your image, which tool do you use? MDT, excellent. So you want to use the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. Couple reasons for that. It's a lot faster to create the image with MDT than it is with Config Manager. I've seen images with MDT take, and I'm talking about blasting out the operating system, laying the applications down, sys-prepping the machine, rebooting into a WinPE, and then capturing an image of the machine. I've seen that process take about an hour, hour and 20 minutes with MDT. The exact same process on Config Manager I've seen take over 3 hours. So if you want to waste a lot of time waiting for that to show up and get your new WIM image, you can do it through Config Manager. But Config Manager also puts a lot of unnecessary files into the WIM image, and then sysprep rips them out. So it's doing a lot of extra work that gets ripped out when it syspreps it. So create your image using MDT. It'll be a lot faster for you. Images created in MDT can be imported into MDT, Config Manager, or you can manually deploy them using the latest version of DISM, the Deployment and Image Servicing Management Tool. In the past, we had to use ImageX. Microsoft says that's been deprecated now, but if you actually go into the MDT scripts that capture the image, you will see that the command being used is still ImageX. It's not DISM. But DISM is capable now of capturing and applying images. So that's something that's new. So we've got our image, we import it into Config Manager, and then if you notice here, I've got a Config Manager site server, I have my database server, management point, and distribution point. Now, quite often, you have the management point and the distribution point on the same machine, and that's fine. I just wanted to break it up so you could see kind of the difference for when the clients talk to which site servers. So what I have is I have an operating system deployment package that I've created. That package, let's say it's about 7-8 gigs in size. I'm going to deploy it to a collection and then update my distribution point. So we send that out to a DP. The actual deployment, telling it how to run that, gets sent out to the management point. Your clients connect to the management point based on whatever you've set the client agent settings to, how often it's supposed to go check in. So, however often you have it set, maybe once a day, maybe once an hour, whatever you have your set to, it goes and checks in with the management point and finds, oh, I have a new application that I can run. It's really an OSD, but it looks at it as just an application that I can run. Then when it runs it, it's going to go to your DP. Now, one of the big things with Config Manager 2012 R2, you need to make sure you have your boundaries and your boundary groups defined properly. One of the clients that I was working with recently, it's an international company. They have DPs in Asia, Ireland, and a few throughout the States. Whoever set up their Config Manager, I don't know who did it, no one will admit to it, I understand why. They had boundaries and boundary groups, one boundary group with everything in it. So how does the client know which DP to go to? Is it supposed to go to the one in Ireland if it's in, let's say, California? It should probably go to one that's local, especially when you're doing OSDs, because these files are really big. And the way we found out that this was not configured properly was the operating system deployments, some of them were taking like 4.5 hours. Some were taking an hour and a half. So we couldn't figure out, well, the machines are sitting right next to each other. What's going on? And you start combing through the log files, and what we found was they were going to different DPs. So make sure that your DP is close to your clients for OSDs, and that you have your boundary, no overlapping boundaries, and your boundary groups configured properly in Config Manager. Things will work a lot better. So the steps to deploy an image, you still need to deploy both the 32 and the 64-bit WinPEs that get installed and created when you install Config Manager. Those guys are there. If you install Configuration Manager and you don't have these two little files, the ones I'm talking about are the boot images. If you don't have those, you don't have a good installation of Configuration Manager. Stop right there. I've seen this happen multiple times. If you're on a virtual machine, I usually do snapshots as I install things. So you finally get IIS installed, snapshot. You get ADK installed. I might do a snapshot, might not. That's an easy one to reinstall. You install SQL. That's a definite snapshot. Then you install Configuration Manager, another snapshot before you do anything. If you install Configuration Manager and you don't have these boot images, you roll back that snapshot and you start again. The scenario that I just recently had, I was in Slovenia last week doing a conference there, and I was setting up my virtual machines. I thought, I'm going to go get an SSD drive. I've wanted one for so long, and I'm going to have my VMs just screaming fast. It's going to be awesome. I know I got a bad drive because I could not build VMs. I got all kinds of errors. So I finally took out the SSD drive, put in my old one. I have no problems. But the issue I was running into was I didn't get these two boot images. I knew immediately that I didn't have a good installation of Config Manager. So rolling back the snapshot, I couldn't even do that because the drive was having so many problems. But make sure that you've got these two, and you have to actually deploy these. You've got to distribute this content because they're both going to be used. If you only deploy one, you think, oh, I'm only going to do 64-bit, so I'm just going to put the 64-bit WinP out there. Your OSDs will fail. You must deploy both of these. For anybody who hasn't set up a Configuration Manager server, I want to show you where you'll find the cheat sheet. It's in the MDT, Help Topics, and you've got these fantastic quick start guides. These are wonderful. They've been around for a long time. I'm not sure why they're in MDT and not in the Configuration Manager help file, but doesn't matter as long as you can find them. Some of the most important things to deal with are these good old IIS and web services. So of course, IIS is required. And you also have to do bits and RDC. Is everybody familiar? I know everybody's known bits for a long time. But RDC, the Remote Differential Compression Utility, what's so cool about that is it actually looks at data in 64K chunks. So let's say you've distributed the entire OSD out to your DPs. Then you make some changes. Let's say it was maybe 8 gigs in size. You make just a few little tiny changes. You don't want 8 gigs of traffic going out to all your DPs again. So what RDC can do for you is it looks at something called trait tables. And this is actually every 64K gets a hashed value. That hashed value goes into a trait table. So that's how RDC knows exactly which chunks have been edited. And then only what's changed gets copied out to your DPs. The reason I bring up RDC is because I actually did not install this guy one time. So setting up my Configuration Manager server. One little thing I didn't install, and nothing works. What it actually told me was RDC was not installed. I kept going into my roles. RDC's right there. It's installed. I removed it, rebooted, put it back, rebooted, ran Config Manager again. RDC's not installed. It was this that wasn't installed. It had nothing to do with RDC whatsoever. So that's when I went back to this quick start guide, and I just started from the beginning and went through as a checklist and just went down and just made sure I did everything exactly the way they have it in this guide. So this really is, there's a lot of steps, and it'll probably take you a full day, if that's all you're going to do that day, to set up a Config Manager server. But use the quick start guides. If you're still on 2007 Configuration Manager, you've got that quick start guide. There we go. 2007 R3. So you've got quick start guides for your zero touch deployments and the light touch. Light touch would be using MDT. So use the cheat sheets that are out there. All right, we kind of hit on this a little bit already. How many of you have more than one image? Quite a few. I never use more than one image. Never, never, never. Because in your task sequence, you can use the same image and just put different applications, different drivers. Everything surrounding that image can be completely different. But when it comes time to make changes to the image, new versions of applications, I don't know, you want to add some more scripting in there. There are some things you want to tweak. It's a lot easier to just do it to one image than to have to go back and rebuild multiple images. Patching images today, it couldn't be easier. Have you looked at imaging patching in Config Manager? You can right-click on your WIM image and just tell it to update. It'll go out to your WSUS server, grab your approved updates, and patch that WIM image. So much nicer than in the past when we had to blast out the image, patch the machine, sysprep, boot it into the WinPE we had created, and then generate yet another image. So much nicer than in the past. It's a lot less work. I think Microsoft is finally realizing that deployment is not your full-time job. Deployment is one little teeny tiny piece of your job. You guys have to keep Active Directory up, DNS, Exchange, SQL, Cisco routers, everything. And I know that that's how IT pros' lives are. So you don't have time to become deployment experts in every single one of these tools. It should just be one little tiny piece of your job. So task sequences allow us to use one image. And since we've got that generic hardware abstraction layer, the layer that sits right above the hardware and in between the operating system speaking to the hardware, the generic HAL allows us to have one image. In the past, we had to have multiple images. There was no way to get around it. In fact, we thought, okay, well, we'll just create one image for each model of machine that I have. But you know what we found is you actually had to create an image based on the chipset, not just the model. That wasn't going low enough. The actual chipsets could be different within the same model of machine. So there were many times that we had to create multiple images for one model because the chipsets were different. So in the past, we did have a lot of images. You don't have to anymore. Task sequences. Has anybody started deploying applications using task sequences? Isn't that cool? It's awesome. Instead of having scripts that will copy applications locally, then install the application, then put some registry hacks in. You might want to tell Acrobat, Professional, or Standard that you don't want to do automatic updates. That could be a registry hack. Then you might want to delete some icons that got put on the desktop because you didn't want any more icons on the desktop. So instead of having scripts that do this, you can create task sequences. You can create a custom task sequence that's blank, empty. There's nothing there. And then you can go in and add command lines that run, packages that run, pretty much anything you want. If you want to put a script in there, you could do that as well. You could do batch files, VBS, PowerShell. Anything you choose can be put in that task sequence. So don't think about task sequences as just to deploy operating systems. You can do anything you want in a task sequence now. Yes? So applications are not allowed to take control of your deployments, and that's what's happening there. The application restarted the machine in the middle of a deployment. Config Manager doesn't know what to do with that. It looks and says, I'm not in control of this anymore. So if you have applications that need to restart, what you have to do is find the syntax to tell it, no, never restart. And then in the task sequence, you can just add restart computer right after the application is installed. And that way, Config Manager is the one that restarted the machine. Then it knows where to pick up where it left off on the last reboot. So applications, they need to be done silently, and they cannot restart, or the OSD kind of fails. So that's the scenario you were seeing then. Just in case you guys don't know, websites to go to. You know, applications are lots of fun because every single application has different commands, different syntax to tell it to run silently. I actually had one time, I'm not kidding and I'm not making this up. You had to tell it to run very, very, very quiet. One wasn't enough. You had to have three varies in there, and that just cracked me up. So if you guys get into scenarios where you can't figure out what the right syntax should be, IT Ninja is the website I always go to. It's now called App Deploy, but that is where most MVPs, if you find syntax that works for an application deployment, that's where we all put it. because we want to have one place on the internet where everybody can go to find out, how do I deploy, fill in the blank, this application? Go to that website, you'll find all kinds of information on what you can make it do with the switches that other people have found. Great website. Let's go in and create an MDT task sequence. So within Config Manager, I'm going to stick with the client task sequence. There are some other templates you can use for other reasons. There are server OSDs you can do. There are custom templates you can create. We'll stick with the client. And we'll give it just a generic name so I know where I was when I did it. Let me just mention, fill in the comments. If you're going to save yourself a lot of headaches if you just kind of take 2 seconds and jot down in the comments what you expect this task sequence to do, because you're going to end up with a lot of task sequences, especially when you first start using OSDs, because you're going to be trying different things in them. And you will have multiple task sequences, and you don't remember why you created this one and what that one's supposed to do. And you don't want to have to blast it out, wait 3 hours, hour and a half, however long it takes. You don't want to have to blast it out to a machine to figure out what you did in that task image or start combing through the task itself, because these tasks can get very involved. So help yourself out. Just jot down what it's supposed to do. I'm going to leave it set to go to a work group, and we'll just put in MS for our organization, and I'm going to skip the product key for now. I never, ever use Config Manager to create my WIM images. I always use MDT. So if I use MDT, there's no reason to tell this task sequence that it can be used to create an image. So I leave it set to, the task sequence will never be used to capture an image. No, I never have the Config Manager client image. No, absolutely not. Because of the client ID. There's a lot of reasons why I don't put the Config Manager client in there. The ID is one of those, and the way that we figured that out was there was one site where the ID was the same in every single image. So in the Config Manager, when we started looking at devices, we saw that we had one device, and it had been updated 2,000 times because we had 2,000 clients. So that was one piece. There's a lot of additional pieces of software that it puts in for it that it needs for the client to be installed, like Silverlight, things like that. So I might put the Silverlight, I'll put Silverlight in, I'll put other things in, but I don't ever install the client itself in the image. It's just a best practice not to. Much cleaner to allow each client machine to get the client, the Config Manager client, installed directly from Config Manager, not in the image. Creating an MDT boot image package. Well, we have to put in a UNC path, so I'll tell it my server name. And then I have a packages folder that I created just for this. And I know that I have to do this 4 times, and I don't want to type that 4 times. So I'm just going to shift home, control C, I'm ready for it next time. And then for this, I'm just going to create a, we'll just call it a BI for boot image. And then what do I want to name it? I like to keep these the same. Keep it as simple as possible. BI. Then, are you going to be deploying a 32 or 64-bit OS? Choose which one. And your scratch space. Now, the scratch space is something that's new. It's kind of been changed with the latest ADK. In the past, the default is 32 megs for scratch space. I didn't know for the longest time what scratch space was. I'm like, what? Why is it important? Why do we have it? Scratch space is just an area of RAM where drivers and applications can put things during their installation. So if you have some drivers, really big drivers that are taking forever to load, increase your scratch space. It can help speed up the deployments. If you have machines with more than a gig of RAM in them, the default scratch space is now, UEFI, 512 megs. Otherwise, you have less than 1 gig. It's set to 32, but you can see how easy it is to change. You just click on the drop-down and select whatever size you'd like. specify what you want injected into your WinPE. So here we've got some language packs, DISM commandlets, .NET framework, Windows PowerShell. You've got some additional features that you can install in the WinPE if you choose to. Specify how to custom the new boot image. We can add pre-start commands. Well, the pre-start command that I always use is I like to update the BIOSes of all the machines before I even start the deployment. So step one is to, if I'm deploying Lenovo, I go to Lenovo's website, get that white paper, and I follow step by step how to flash the BIOS using SCCM in an OSD. If you're deploying Dell machines, you go to Dell's website. They have a different white paper that you have to follow. But all the companies have this well documented at this point. You can add extra files to the new boot image. So you might want to put a tools folder out there with some of the tools that you use most often during your deployments. You can change the background bitmap. If you don't like the way it looks, you can put in your own picture. Just make sure it's the exact same size as the default, because if it's too big, it will blow up your deployments. I know I did it that way. Enable command support. This is selected for us all the time now. So during a deployment, we can always hit F8 to get a command prompt. You might need to check and make sure you've got an IP address, so a little IP config, maybe ping something to make sure you can get to a network path. But you have to remember to close that command prompt. When the OSD gets to a point that it needs to restart the machine, if you have the command prompt open, it will prevent the restart. So you have to close that command prompt or it'll never continue. We're going to tell it to create an MDT files package. And I'm just going to paste that in. And we'll just call it MDT F for files. Name it the same thing. And then you have to tell it, where's your OS image? Where's your WIM? Do you have a WIM? Have you previously imported as an operating system? Excuse me. If you had put it into the operating system images node previous to running this task sequence, then you could click on the specify an existing OS image, click browse, and you'll get a list of all the WIMs that you've previously added. You can select the one you want this task sequence to use. If you don't have a custom WIM image and you want it to create one and put it in as an operating system image, this is our second selection. Or if you have previously put one in as an install package, or you want to create an install package based off of the Windows DVD or the equivalent ISO file. That's the last option. So make sure you choose the correct option. And here I'm just going to tell it to go point to the D drive. And the package source, where we're going to put it, is going to be in packages and OSI for an OS image. Name it the same thing. And then are we going to perform a zero-touch deployment, or are we going to do UDI? Has anybody played with UDI yet? Yeah, not many people have played around with it. One of the cool things you can do is you create a task sequence, and then you can go into the user-driven, and you can redesign the entire deployment wizard. You can add additional pages to it. The favorite one that I add is network drives. So you might be able to list all the network drives that your users need. Then during deployment, if you're deploying for Susie, maybe she needs 5 network drives mapped. So you just, from the drop-down box, select the 5 that you want for Susie during that deployment. When you go over and do Jim's machine, his deployment, well, he's got 17 map drives that need to be there. Just select them from the drop-down. You don't have to have it scripted. You don't have to go in and do it manually each time for each user. So it's nice to be able to extend the functionality of what the deployments can do. And it's very simple and well-documented. So UDI is fantastic. I don't like the name of it because it makes you think that it's users sitting there doing their deployments. Shouldn't be users. We're doing a zero touch here, not UDI. I'm going to tell it to create a new Config Manager client package and create a new USMT package. Tell it where I want to put that, what I'm going to call it, USMT1. specify a new settings package. I'm going to open these packages in just a second and show you what's actually in each one of these. I'm just going to name this one set. Is that a question? Does someone have a question? No? No sysprep is needed. Well, I'm never going to capture an image using this, so why would I need sysprep? Then we're on the summary. And if I click next, we're going to wait about 40 minutes to see all these packages get created. So I've done this already. I'm going to hit cancel. We will just pop right out to Windows Explorer, go to my E drive and the packages folder. And the MDT boot image. There's my WinPE. The MDT settings. Does this look familiar? Anyone who's used the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, this is your custom settings INI file. So this is the file where you can come in and customize and automate your deployments. Well, how do you mean automate? You could set this up so that machines that came in and they've got specific models on them, so you want specific drivers to be installed, you could force the drivers to be installed, whether or not the device is plugged in or turned on. You can also do that in a task sequence. So it's nice to be able to tell it, install these drivers. I don't care if the device is present or powered on. I want the drivers installed. You can also automate that certain machines get named different things. So in here, we could do OSD computer name equals, and then we could break it down and say if it's a laptop machine, maybe we name it LT, and then plus percent asset tag percent. If you want to name your machines LT and then the asset tag. Now, you do need to make sure the asset tag gets into the BIOS because that's where it's going to pull it from. An easy way to do that is you can set up a collection variable. So on the collection where we're going to deploy this OSD task sequence to, you can do a variable on that. And during the deployment, the first thing that happens is the variable box pops open and you get to input exactly what you've been prompted for. So you could do computer name. You could do asset tag. And then asset tag, there are scripts that will actually write it. When you type the asset tag in, there are scripts that will write it into the BIOS for you. And then when it gets down to where it's going to name the computer, the asset tag is populated, and it can be used as part of the computer name. There's actually quite a few settings you can put in here. And to show you where those settings are, back to the MDT's help file. That's where you'll find these. This time, instead of looking at a quick start guide, we'll look at the toolkit reference and properties. This is showing you the properties that are most used that you can automate and skip when you're building MDT images. So when you build an MDT image, you don't have to go through that nice friendly wizard that asks you a bunch of questions. You can automate the process. What I like to do is tell MDT, skip everything except I want to input a password on the credential page. So the credential page, when it launches, it's got a username in it, the domain name, but I still have to type in the password. And then I might want to tell it or see the page that says, do you want to capture an image of this machine after you've deployed it? I'd say yes, make that selection, tell it where I want to put it and what I want to name it. So those are the only two pages I usually want to see, and sometimes not even that. Sometimes just put in a password, walk away. Come back an hour and 20 minutes later, you have a brand new WIM image. But these are all the settings that you can put inside a custom settings INI. One of the really cool features of Config Manager is that each task sequence gets its own custom settings INI. In MDT, remember that's a free tool, doesn't have all the bells and whistles. In MDT, each deployment share that you create gets one set of custom settings INI and bootstrap INI. We don't need bootstrap INI in Config Manager, we don't use that. But we do use the custom settings INI. So in MDT, your deployments have to run the same for all machines in that deployment share. With Config Manager, each task sequence can be run completely different than all the others. So it really makes it more flexible for you for what you want to be displayed. These are the common settings, but there's a few more. Take a look at all these settings that you can put in your custom settings. This is how you automate and customize your deployments. There's tons of settings that you can use. So to learn which settings and where to put them, go to the MDT help file. This is your best friend when it comes to custom settings INI, whether you're using MDT or Config Manager, they're the same settings. Our unattended XML. Who's seen Windows System Image Manager? Anybody played with that? A few. Usually I get like one hand and it's halfway up, because it's not an easy tool to use, is it? This is what it looks like if you don't open it in WSIM. This is your unattended XML file. If you open it using WSIM, and I'm going to cheat, the nice thing, well, I think one of the nicest things about these tools is they actually create that unattended XML file for you. You don't have to go learn WSIM. Here's my answer file, and what I have are 7 configuration passes. Now, configuration passes are just a fancy name for the different phases that an operating system installation goes through. Every time you do an OSD, you always use pass 1, 4, and 7, every single time. The other passes, normally we don't use them. OEMs use them a lot. You might do something with offline servicing. A couple things that you can do in offline servicing is when that machine is in a WinPE, you could run USMT to gather users' data and settings much faster. You could patch that machine in a WinPE much faster than having the full-blown OS up and running. It'll cut 30 minutes off your deployments. It's amazing how much faster some of these features are when you do them in offline servicing versus the operating system's up and running, and then you're running the tools. So what we have is just a lot of information for what's supposed to happen during that phase. So in a WinPE phase, you might want to find out, well, what language should I do the installation in? What drive should I install it to? What partition on that drive? In Pass 4, the specialized, there's all kinds of information in here for what we're going to name the computer, what the time zone will be, resolution, all kinds of settings that we can add. In Pass 7, there's things that you can add like time zone, resolution. There's a lot of settings that you can put in Pass 4 or 7 in 2 different passes. In fact, some of these components you can add in Pass 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that's when the fun begins, really. We look at shell setup. This is our catalog of what components can be added to the answer file. So if I went in and just grabbed a couple of these, looked at start tiles, well, guys, this, for my start tiles, can be added to Pass 4, Pass 6, or Pass 7. So how do I know which one to put it in? You don't. There's no documentation. There's no way to tell. So what you have to do is you have to do a lot of testing when it comes to WSIM. So a lot of times what I found is if you put a setting in Pass 4, do the deployment, sometimes it causes an additional reboot. I've walked into environments where they had 7, 8, 9 reboots happening for a deployment, and I'm like, why are we rebooting every 30 seconds is what it feels like for a deployment. That's a lot of reboots. 3 or 4, I'm okay with that, but 9, way too many, way too much additional time. And what you'll find is if you move something from Pass 4 to Pass 7, it gets rid of the additional reboot. I have no idea why, but you have to play around with these settings and plug them into one pass. If you don't get the desired results, take it out of there, put it into the 7, and see what the results are. So WSIM is not the most friendly tool. There's not great documentation on it, sorry to say. And you're just going to have to spend a lot of time testing everything when you do use WSIM, which is why I love the fact that both MDT and Config Manager creates this for me. All I have to do is walk through a nice, friendly wizard, answer a few questions, and then the tools plug everything into the correct passes for me. I don't have to know where it goes or how to get it in there. But if I want to tweak it later on, I can. I can always come in and make changes to it. You won't break anything. Let's go back to Config Manager, and we're looking at our packages. MDT Toolkit. Does this look familiar to anyone who's used MDT before? it's your deployment share, your scripts folder that has all the scripts that run the deployment for you. One of the nice things with these scripts is as a script runs, every time a script runs, it generates a log file with the same name. So when you run ztigather, it creates a ztigather.log. What's nice about that is you can just glance on the C drive, go into the Mini and T folder, and just drill down SMS OSD logs. You get down and look at your logs. You could just glance in there and see, based on the logs, at what point you are in the task sequence, based on which scripts have run. And then the big log that takes kind of a big picture of everything is the BDD.log. Yes? So he's talking about the gather step that's run in MDT task sequence multiple times. You guys can even put in an additional gather step. I love the ZTI gather. ZTI gather, the only thing it does is generates a log file. And then inside that log file, you can find all kinds of information about that machine. Is it a laptop? Is it a desktop? What's the model? What's the make? Is it on battery power? So with the ZTI gather that's running quite a bit in MDT, I'll tell you why it's doing it so often in a second, you can key pieces of information off of that in your custom settings INI. So I could tell it, if it's a laptop and it's on battery, abort the deployment. I don't want to get halfway through an OSD and have the machine run out of power on me. So if it's not plugged in, don't even start. The ZTI gather step is in there multiple times, mainly because the scripts are keying off of information in the log. And after a restart, the logs get deleted. So not even after a restart, and as well as when steps and phases complete and you go to the new phase, the deployments clean up after themselves. After a successful deployment, the entire Mini and T folder on the C drive should be gone. That would indicate a successful deployment. So the ZTI gather runs multiple times because it's dumped the information out of that log, so the log doesn't exist anymore, and now another script needs to get information from it. So they run it multiple times. And again, you can add the ZTI gather step in there yourselves and then run scripts or put settings in the custom settings INI that key off of information in there. Did we finish up all the packages? No, we didn't. There's one I didn't show you. USMT. The USMT package. It goes and gets all of the USMT tools, scan state, load state, those are the most important tools, and all of the XML files like MIG app, MIG docs, MIG user. That's what USMT uses to find out what data am I supposed to get on these machines? What settings am I supposed to gather? So you've got a package now that can be used for 32 or 64-bit. So you don't need to create one for 32 and one for 64. You can just use that same package for all deployments and the USMT portion. And the last package that we have was just simply the WIM image that gets created. So that's our operating system. Yes? That's correct. Yeah, it should be deleted because you don't need it after it's run and it's done the scan state, put the data out there, and then the load state to bring it back down. You really don't need USMT for any reason. So it does get deleted, and I think it's a good thing that the OSDs come clean up after themselves, get rid of everything that they put out there, because you're not going to use it after that. And it's really not an easy tool to use when you're manually setting things up. So I showed you how to create that task sequence. This is what it looks like when you're done. So check out all these settings. And all we had to do was answer a couple nice friendly questions. You don't have to know exactly what to plug in or where to put it. Starts out with our partitioning. And the scripts are smart enough to look into that ZTI gather log and find out, hey, this is a UEFI machine. So I need four partitions. You got to toss in that MSR partition as well for UEFI machines. So kind of cool that you don't have to do it. You don't have to come in and set up the partitioning. If it's not a UEFI machine, you'll get just the default 3 partitions. Coming down, we can set up BitLocker in a refresh scenario. You could have a machine sitting out there that's already been BitLockered. How are you going to deploy, say it's Windows 7, how are you going to deploy Windows 8 or 8.1 image to that machine if it's BitLockered? You need to disable BitLocker, or at least the BDE protectors, to get access to the machine. So here we disable BitLocker. Then it runs USMT. You don't have to know any of the switches. It automatically can look at exactly what you've configured and run USMT based on what you've chosen. Or you can set it with the defaults and just get the default data and settings. Coming down, if it's a new computer, new computers would be bare metal machines with no OS on it. They would start down here, and it starts with your partitioning scheme again. If you're doing a refresh, there's an operating system on that machine. The scripts are smart enough to ask the right questions during the deployment. So if there's an operating system found, then it's going to ask you, should I back up this machine? There are things that you can do if it finds an operating system out there. If there is no operating system, there's nothing to back up. After the installation, we could apply Windows settings, apply network settings. So there are steps previously where, think about your servers, not so much for the desktop machines, because we don't really care about those IP addresses. They're probably going to be DHCP anyway. But on your servers, you might want to make sure that when you re-image a server, that it always gets the same IP address, subnet mask, default gateway, DNS, WINS, IPs. So you can tell it, capture network settings, and then apply those same network settings right back to the machine when you've got the new OS out there. Run software updates. There's our gather that's running. Has anybody migrated Config Manager 2007 to 2012? Has anyone done that yet? Did you migrate your OSDs, the task sequences? We tried. It didn't work. One of the things that will happen is any task inside a task sequence that has this logo down here, the solution accelerators at the bottom, that will fail to migrate. So I wouldn't even recommend migrating your task sequences. Usually what you're adding in here are driver packages and applications. There might be some other little customizations that you add as a task, but what I do is I just open in my 2007 environment, open the task sequence. Then I go in and I grab out the pieces that I've customized, that I've added myself. I'll migrate that task sequence from 2007 to 2012. And then in 2012, I create a brand new MDT task sequence. And then I just open the one I migrated and copy and paste my customization settings into the new MDT. That will work every single time. But migration of OSD components and collections, not a good idea. It never comes across the way you expect it to. So I'm not going to go through everything in this task sequence, but I did want to show you that it's a lot of information in here. And even if you're not doing USMT, let me caution you about something. See, I have to try everything. So I came in, I'm like, well, I'm not going to do USMT because we're not going to do anything with user data. So I deleted all the USMT steps. And then my OSD task sequence failed. Because the scripts, underlying scripts, expect to find certain settings in here. So I would say, don't delete steps out. If you want to disable something, go ahead and do that. You can highlight, go to the options, and tell it to disable that step. But don't start deleting big chunks of the task sequence. Very possibly you're going to cause it to fail. I'm going to come out of there. And one more thing that we need to do before we can actually go to the client machine is create task sequence media. Now, with MDT, you can create standalone media and put everything you need for a deployment on a USB stick. It's called media. But with MDT, you cannot password protect, and you don't have any version control. That USB stick is good for as long as nobody runs it over with a car or breaks it. So people could roll back accidentally to an old image that you had shipped them a year ago. With Config Manager, you can't do that. So here, I'm going to choose bootable media. I'll choose site-based. And what are we going to name it? Let's browse out. And that looks good. I'll just call it CM, nice and short. And then you can password protect the USB stick. And you might not think that's important, but companies that have homegrown or built line of business applications, I think, is probably the correct term to use, but it's applications that you have internally had created. Just the knowledge of what information goes inside applications could give hackers information that you don't want them to have about your company, about what the company does. I know a lot of federal agencies, they would be in a lot of trouble if their image got out and somebody could actually deploy the image and look at their internal applications. Even if there's no data in it, the type of data that's being stored can be sensitive as well. So it's nice to be able to password protect this. And also, give it a certificate. By default, this guy is only good for a year. After a year, it'll stop rebooting. In fact, Config Manager can kill it prior to that. You can actually set it up to go in and tell it, oh, I know it's been only 2 months, but I need to revoke all of those USBs. So you can tell it to send out a kill for the certificate. And the next time someone tries to restart using it, Config Manager can block it, and it will no longer boot at all. So you get a lot more control and security with Config Manager's boot media. You would choose the boot image. I'll choose MDT. The distribution point where you want this to go. The management point where you want it to go. And then any customizations that you'd like to add. Choosing next is going to kick it off. But I've already done that. We don't have 40 minutes to sit here and wait for it to generate this ISO. So I have the ISO. I have it out on my desktop machine, and I've already put it on my VM, a bare metal VM. So the next step that you would have to do with this task sequence is to deploy it. In 2007, you would call this advertising. Tell it which collection we want to send it out to. By the way, you would never really send this to all systems. That could be very bad. But I've already sent it to the one that I want to send it to, so you can't send it there again. You want to make it available? Available to what? To Config Manager clients only, so you have to have an operating system up and running and a valid Config Manager client installed on it. Those are the only machines that would be able to use it. Or you want it to go to Configuration Manager clients, the standalone media, or clients that you're going to Pixie boot. Only media and Pixie? I'm going to go ahead and choose all three. And we're not going to schedule this or make it mandatory. I want it to show the task sequence progress. I'm not going to set up any alerts. And specify how to run the content. I love this. So from the dropdown, there are no options. There never have been any options. I'm not sure why it's a dropdown. And I'm going to cancel on this guy because we don't want to kick it off. Go over to my client machine, and it's a VM. One note real quick. Guys, please, when you're creating your images, do not create the image on your physical machines. It is a waste of time. You will be banging your head against the wall trying to get drivers to load properly, and then SysPrep's going to rip them all out of the image anyway. So please, when you create your images, use virtual machines. You won't have driver issues, and it's a lot faster to generate your images. So on this client, I can now, after I click into the client, give it my password, and fail to run my task sequence. Not sure why I've got that, and I'm going to run out of time here, but I can look at my assets, my devices. Let's see, in Holland, if I got my new direct add. So I actually directly added, and I didn't, that's why. Update my membership. Refresh. Hurry up. got my client, might not have time to restart. Now when it comes up, the only thing you're going to see that's different is when I click next, it will start up. It's already booted into a WinPE. So what it does, it ends up downloading the MDT WinPE, and then it restarts the MDT WinPE, kicks off the deployment. And I am actually out of time. So if we go back to the slide deck, the information that we covered, we talked about the tool to use, SCCM to deploy, MDT to create the image, a lot faster, you'll like it better. MDT integration, talked about how to add it, how to remove it, created the MDT task sequence. It's not that scary, it's big, it's ugly, but there's a lot you can add to it as well. We talked about automation and customization, how you want to go to the MDT's help file to get additional information, even for Config Manager. And on that note, guys, I want to thank you very much for getting up early this morning and spending your morning with me. So enjoy the rest of the conference, and I hope to see you later. Thanks.